Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 81. And jumping gobstoppers, I've got this really great new snack that I can't stop eating.
What is it?
Would you like a crouton?
Ooh. Crouton.
Crouton, Glenn?
Yes, thank you.
I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
I don't know why. I just had a hankering.
What kind are they?
Seasoned herb.
Oh, seasoned herb croutons. Those are the best.
Kind of got a sulfur taste.
Zesty
in them, though,
crunch to salads and soups.
Sulfuric aftertaste, a little bit.
You know what I like best about croutons?
I'm okay with that, though.
They would never, ever, ever come down from outer space in a spaceship and try to enslave our brains.
That is true. So how are you guys doing this week?
Shall we go around and introduce ourselves just for tradition?
I think we already did.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh. I was too busy eating my croutons.
You were so focused on the croutons. You even started it.
No, I guess that's true.
That's what threw you off, is you went this way instead of this way.
It's true.
No, you always
I always start it, but we kept talking. And
he got so involved in the gag that he got lost in where we were actually at.
Okay.
It's going to be a great show.
Yeah, we're really big shoe. Look at all the fun stuff we've got. Bag of croutons.
Keith,
spare
what'd you
no
do
expense this week, kids.
What'd you do this week, Keith? Anything exciting?
Did some wedding stuff.
Is that coming up?
That is coming up. 5 weeks from yesterday.
5 weeks away. Wow.
Yeah.
Quit playing with that. Sorry.
Went and played some disc golf. Watch Batman Begins in preparation of
Can we tell the
weekend.
Disc golf story?
Yeah, let's tell the disc golf story. I ended up having Tuesday evening off last week because of the All-Star game on Fox. There was no 9 o'clock newscast. So we all went out, all being me.
I didn't go out. I had to work.
Me, Sarah,
you mean you didn't
Sean,
have the night off
Mel,
because of the All-Star game?
And Billy went out to play at a new course that I've been wanting to go out.
It's new to us.
Disc golf course. It's a 9-hole course. And, well, why don't you take it from there?
This course 8 discs. And the interesting thing is it's not challenging.
Well, I can't say that.
It's challenging.
It's just not long.
You, normally when you lose a Frisbee, it's because, it went in the lake. You know? Mel threw one into the tree line. And it disappeared.
Why?
Because we couldn't find it. Because we looked, and it wasn't there.
Well, and of course, we had the sunlight against us. It was going down at that point.
Now, keep in mind that by the time we got out there and decided, let's go play, it was 8.
Well, we went to dinner first.
Yeah, we went to dinner first. That took way too long. We spent way too much time at dinner. But we didn't get out there, and I mean, the sun was starting to set when we started. So then all of a sudden, it was like, okay, let's hurry up. We'll speed run through 9 holes of disc golf. So then the first disc went into the forest, and we were like, oh, no. Well, that's okay. It's bright pink. It should be easy to spot, right?
No. There's rough, like, tall grass and other places where we've gotten discs in before this point.
I've found discs in the woods before. Never had a problem. This one, gone. So, all right, we'll give up on it, and I've made the determination, because I hate losing discs. And this one even mine. It was Mel's. But I've made the determination. I'll come back out tomorrow and look for it. We'll keep playing. So then, in between the fairways, which are basically just big mowed grass, there's these really big, tall prairie grass sections. I mean, weeds and germinating grass and that kind of stuff, right?
And cockleburrs.
And a lot of cockleburrs. So I throw, and my bright yellow neon disc goes right in the middle of one of these patches of grass and vanishes. I mean, just poof. Kaiser Soze. I mean, just gone. And the sun is setting, and it's getting really dark, and we spend more, I don't know, 15 minutes looking for that disc. And just, I mean, it's right here. It should be right here. This is waist-high grass. It shouldn't be this hard to find it, right? Gone.
So we kind of get to that point where we finished that hole, and there were still two holes left to go. This was hole seven, and we were kind of like...
We gave up on hole
We're calling seven. This game on a kind of dark. It's just too dark out. Now, you can play in the dark. They do make the light-up discs with the... You get the little... Remember the little glow-in-the-dark wrist bracelets? Mm-hmm. Glow stick. Well, not glow sticks, but the bendy ones.
They're still called glow sticks.
Are they still called glow sticks? I thought glow sticks mean...
You can get them at the dollar store for really cheap.
Really?
Yeah, they come in a little bundle of, I don't know, 20, 30.
Okay.
For cheap, for buck.
Anyway, I'm going to totally buy some of those tomorrow. No reason, just because I love them.
I could probably bring you some.
Do you ever break them in half and then drink the stuff out of them?
No.
It makes all of your orifices glow. I don't recommend
it. It does say non-toxic, but I don't think you're intending
Don't do this at home. I'm kidding. So anyway, Mr. Keith, who I feel bad for, because anytime we get to go out and play... No, actually, I take it back. I don't feel bad for him at all. He could play. He could play every day if he wanted. He just chooses not to get up
I just have trouble getting up.
Noon.
Before work.
Now, admittedly, he's got that weird schedule because he works late, and, you know, so he's up late. And then he sleeps in. But, you know, on a weekend when he doesn't have to do that.
Hey, I was up at a decent time.
And we tell him.
On Saturday.
You could get up early.
We just had other stuff to get done, and we were waiting on Sarah's mom.
You could get up early. We could go play in the morning. You remember this conversation. Mm-hmm. He was like, nah, I don't know about that. So he says...
Yeah, I was here Friday when we were discussing this weekend.
He says, I want to play around 2. It's like, are you kidding me? 2 o'clock in the afternoon? That's the hardest part of the day. It's going to be like a billion degrees outside.
I initially said noon to 1, and I got pushed back and pushed back.
Well, admittedly, we didn't help because we didn't get there until almost 3.
Oh, I should have came then.
Yeah, you could
I didn't realize that because I was still finishing stuff up when you texted.
So we get out there. We started at 2:45. So it is now officially, no? Was it close to 3?
It was 3:30-ish.
Oh, was it that late?
The story's getting longer and longer.
Okay. So we get out there, and it's now officially the hottest part of the day. It's 110 degrees out there on the course. And his argument for that is...
It was not 110.
It was not 110. Okay.
His argument is, it didn't break 100.
It was over 100.
No.
So it was 101, according to my phone. 110 sounds better, but it was 101. I looked. I checked.
I don't believe him, so nobody else will.
Do you want to tell the story?
It was really hot.
Where were you at? I was inside in the air conditioning.
I was working out around my house. I was cleaning pools and mowing and doing all kinds of stuff. And 100 degree weather. It's an inflatable pool. It was no joy, I tell you.
Anyway, so we get out there. Admittedly, it's the hottest part of the day. And it's hot. And I'm looking at Keith. I'm just glaring at him.
I had been out there for an hour already.
Well, that's true. But you were in the car.
No, not the entire time. Because we went and searched for discs.
You went and searched for our discs, which I appreciate, but...
Didn't find them.
Still gone. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm just glaring at him. It's hot. Why are we out here? And he's like, it's only 9 holes. It's still hot. Well, but yeah, it's only 9 holes. So that means, you know, that's like playing 18 holes in 90 degree weather. Because that's better.
Which you do all the time.
Oh, I try not to. I get up early in the morning and go when it's cooler.
Still, during that heat wave, it was still 90 in the morning.
So we went and played 9 holes, and by the end of it, we were exhausted and hot and nasty, and still no discs.
You threw a 96 or a 36, though, didn't you?
I threw 35.
35.
On 9 holes, which I was happy with, although I understand par is 27, but...
Technically, still pretty good.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain too much about it. And I didn't lose any discs that day, so I was most pleased with that.
You knew where not to throw them this time.
Well, that's just... No, well, they still went there, but I found these. That's the thing that just... You know, if we're playing on a disc golf course... And maybe, I don't know, because I'm still a newbie at this, but if you're on a disc golf course and there's, like, a bear cave, and the disc goes into the bear cave, you know what? That one's gone. I'm not going after that one. A lake. Okay, I lost it. Weeds! This is just tall grass. It should have been easy to find.
Woods.
Not like the Forbidden Forest. Like woods.
Not even very thick woods.
Gone.
No real trees.
No.
There's $30 bushes down the drain.
I know.
So they're about $15 a disc.
And the really ironic thing is that Mom had just bought me these 2 new discs.
Oh.
So I was all excited. Now, the one I lost was not one of these. But...
My selection is not increasing any, because every time I get a new one, I lose an old one. So it's like...
Although I did go get a new disc, and I'm not that impressed with it right now. Mm. I don't know if it was the heats. I just didn't play as good as I think I should have.
You were throw
was good. I was a little off.
Inovia?
Yeah, Vulcan.
Vulcan.
The barbs I kept throwing you were probably not helping.
Did you get Inovas? Is that what you got, or would you get...
I got Inovas, yeah. I got a Pro Destroyer and a Dart Putter. Mm. And I like my dart putter a lot more than I like my old putter, but it still can't find the hole very well.
What all did you do, Glenn, other than yard work?
Yard work, cleaning the pool out for the kids so they could swim yesterday.
And how hot was it when you were doing this?
Well, it wasn't 110. It felt bad. It was like, it was in the upper 90s. What else? We didn't do much. We went to Fiesta last night, which...
How was the Fiesta?
For people that don't know, there's a church here in town and school that every year they do this huge fundraising event that's just totally famous here in Topeka. And what they do is they have food and carnival rides and whatnot.
And vendors. Mm-hmm,
and vendors and events. You know, there's people performing and dancing. And it's usually Mexican music and dancing and theme.
The first night they have a jalapeno eating contest.
Yeah, yeah.
And every year I think, hey, I ought to go this year, and don't.
Holly and I have gone every year since I've lived here.
Do you know the last time I went?
Probably with me, huh?
Yep. Do you remember inviting me and my first wife out, and we went with you guys?
Yeah,
to yeah.
That's how long it's been.
The only time I've ever gone was for work, was to cover something at the Fiesta.
We go every year. We love the food. So we went out there and did
It's always so hot during the Fiesta. And the last thing I want...
Who schedules a Mexican event in July in Kansas?
The last thing I want when it's 100 degrees is spicy Mexican food.
Yeah. The nice thing is, though, now they've built that indoor thing.
Indoor.
You can eat inside now. I used to eat outside, and I was miserable.
But it was an indoor thing, though?
The food is so...
It's fantastic food, but you know, when it's 110 degrees, I don't want a burrito.
The nice thing, now, though,
I want a salad.
to defend, not a taco salad.
A real salad.
You can now park at 8th and Madison, take a bus down there for $1. So you don't have to worry about parking. The bus actually drops now off at that building where you eat, which used to bus way the heck far away.
I remember that.
Now it's right next door. Get off there. You go get your food. If you go late enough, you can miss all the lines. Get your food. You go right inside. Eat in the air conditioning. I mean, the worst of it was we walked down to the carnival so the kids could ride, and that's when it was the hottest for us. I mean, it was the most miserable. Kids rode the road, but the kids were having so much fun, we didn't care.
Was there a demolition derby?
It was not a demolition derby.
Granted.
Is that a big Mexican thing? Do they have demolition derbies in Mexico?
I don't know. I know they have them in the south of America, of the United States.
This is the south of America.
The south
they're
of America.
Of this country.
You mean like Brazil?
No.
I bet Rio de Janeiro could be famous for their
I'm totally poking the bear with the stick. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not grumpy. So, anyway, no demolition derbies. But, no, that was pretty much all we did. And then today we had a friend... of ours, their son had a birthday party, so we went there for lunch, and then we went to Casa.
You went and had authentic Mexican food, and then had American Mexican food.
It wasn't until we were almost there, and I
English
said,
"English American food, Mexican food."
We got there, and
English Mexican,
or we were pulling up, and I said, "Oh, we had Mexican last night." Because you know, Holly and I, we eat Mexican every night.
I'm getting that way, actually.
So, I've come to the conclusion. But this didn't dawn on me until I said, we just had Mexican food last night.
The very unfortunate truth is that neither Mel nor any of the kids like Casa. And it's taken a few times to go and come to that realization that they're not happy with anything they get there. And, of course, I could eat Casa 10 times a day.
Oh, yeah.
I'd pay for it, but I could do it.
Wait, we're talking Casa?
Casa.
Okay. I like Casa.
The Mexican restaurant, not the fast food place.
I always confuse it with Taco Casa and Taco Villa.
No, see, Taco Villa is awesome for fast food Mexican, but for sit down,
it's no
quality Mexican. I like Taco Villa better.
Anybody remember Taco Grande?
I do remember Taco
Grande. The little Mexican dude asleep by the cactus on their logo. Yeah.
I remember the logo.
We actually had a Taco Grande in Liberal when I was growing up. So.
I bet you had a big cheese pizza, too, when they came around.
We had a big cheese pizza. Anyway, that was my weekend. Let's move on to news. No one wants to hear about the boring things we did this
week. No, not really.
No, we didn't get, we didn't cover you.
Same thing.
You did the same stuff.
I went and played disc golf with Keith in the heat.
And instead of watching Batman, you watched Bond.
Hey, yeah, we got two free Bond movies this week.
Which one did you watch?
We watched...
oh, boy. I opened
Diamonds
the can
of Are Forever.
Which one?
Diamonds Are Forever.
The good one.
And we watched that last night.
Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die today.
Yeah, that'll be next in line. Cool.
So we're trucking right through them.
Your next one's my favorite Bond movie.
It's one of my favorites, yeah. I can't say it's my absolute favorite, but it's...
No, not the next one.
Oh, don't say
the
Spy.
One after that.
You're
yeah, Spy
so,
Loves
so
Me.
It's so cliche
sorry.
To say Spy Loves Me is your
my favorite.
Favorite.
Yeah, I love Spy Loves Me. Spy Loves Me.
That's like
I
mean, saying
I do too,
Genesis of the Devil
is
your favorite classic.
Really Man with the Golden Gun is a good one.
No, yeah, but, it is. Yeah, I really like it.
No, I love the Spy Loves Me. That's so good. So good.
Living Like That was actually Barbara a lot better than I remember it, because I don't think I'd seen it since, like... Originally, like the, well, originally for me was the first time it aired on
which one?
TV. Live and Let Die.
Oh, Live and Let Die.
And now, well, Diamonds was another one that I didn't remember most of. So,
Live and Let Die is Roger Moore's edgiest Bond film.
Yes,
I think
I agree.
But we're not going down that path.
Well, and Diamonds is also the softest Connery.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Of course, that was after he returned to the role.
Yeah, too, well, so. I was watching Diamonds and I just had this, you remember everything you didn't like about View to a Kill because Roger Moore was getting too old to play Bond? That's kind of how I'm starting to feel about this. I love Connery, but man.
What's even worse
he's...
when you watch the
I don't know if we're going to include that
one.
Yeah, Never Say Never.
Oh, you've got to.
You've got to add it at the end. Does that have to be in order? For that one, since it's not official?
No, but I mean, when I watch them in order, I always watch it right next to Fear Eyes Only, because...
The year this year it came out.
It just has to be, so I don't know.
I've talked to Mel about it.
If you had to watch the original Casino Royale, too?
I talked to her about adding those two in.
If you had James Bond canon, I consider...
Never Say Never
Thank
Again.
Thank you. Never Say Never Again is apocryphal. It's not quite canon, but it's not quite outside the realm of...
Well, it's no Shaka Doctor, but it's...
Right. I mean, it is a African-American Felix Leiter.
I don't have a problem with that.
It stars Rowan Atkinson.
I mean, my God.
It's an Elseworld?
We get to Live and Let Die.
No, I don't have a problem with that.
No,
but it
we get to Live and Let Die, and Felix Leiter shows up, and Mel goes, that's not the same guy, is it? I'm like, you're kidding me, right? It's not the same actor in any of them.
Yes, it is.
No.
Yes, the actor that was in Live and Let Die returned for Living Daylights.
Oh, yeah.
No,
wait.
License to Kill. License to Kill.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the same Felix Leiter, yes.
But not any of the rest of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, up till this point in what we've been watching, it's been a different Felix every
Correct.
Time he's shown
Correct.
Up. Okay. Yeah, I'm not crazy.
No, you're not. You're not. So far,
I just play one on podcast.
But he does. The actor does re-show up as
I liked
Felix.
Him. I think he's probably, well, except for Jack Lord. Except I think Jack Lord was not given enough to do when he was Felix. He just kind of showed up and stood around and looked grumpy.
Felix in Casino Royale is African-American, too.
Mm-hmm.
So the CIA.
But I didn't like him.
The CIA, apparently, in your rationale of every Bond is a different person with that persona, then perhaps the CIA must do the same thing. So
here's hoping.
All right, well, let's get on to it. Can't go down the Bond road.
You want to talk Spider-Man some this week?
We're going to have to do a Star Trek podcast, and we're going to have to do a James Bond podcast eventually. All right. Well,
we totally could.
We totally could. The big news this week is Comic-Con.
Yes, Comic-Con is going on. And at Comic-Con, early in the week, they unveiled the official... Or they showed
the official.
They showed pictures of the Sonic Screwdriver Universal Remote Control.
Yes,
I thought you were going to say they showed pictures of the new Q, which they did.
Of the what?
First from Skyfall. Yeah, I saw that too. I was trying to direct all of my Comic-Con stuff towards Doctor Who, but you're right. They did. They showed the actor that's going to play Q in Skyfall. Sorry,
it's a bomb thing. Sorry.
Join us, and Keith. They also announced that it will be available.
What's Q short for?
Quartermaster.
Attaboy.
They also announced it will be available from August 31st exclusively for the first 60 days.
Something, isn't it?
Mother.
From
really?
Forbidden Planets.
Yeah.
and Firebox.com in the UK.
Right. I know what you mean.
And ThinkGeek and the BBC America
He's
Shop
plowing
and the
right
US.
Through. I'm proud of him. He's not getting distracted at all.
And the price point on it in the US is $99.95 from ThinkGeek.
$100.
That's a lot of nuts.
$100.
But they also there's
remote control.
There's
now, I mean, cool as it is,
video of it in use.
Yeah, but who would pay $100 for a remote?
No, I wouldn't. Even if it was a Sonic screwdriver.
And there are 17 different movements and all sorts of different stuff.
I have decided that I'm going to buy the cheap toy one. I'm going to strap it to the top of my remote. I'm just going to point it at the thing and push buttons and make it make sounds.
Duct tape.
Yeah.
That's not the same.
I think if I used, like, black tape, I could actually make it look like it's, like, part of it. Yeah.
Well, they've got all that different kind of duct tape now.
That's right, different colors. Yeah, and if I wrapped it in the multiple colors in the same color as the...
You could definitely do white and black. Everything else, you're kind of screwed.
You could do a John Pertwee screwdriver.
Yeah.
You get that black and yellow OSHA
there
stripe.
There you go, I'm sorry, $100 for it.
It's...
No.
It's
that was
deep.
Really cool. Until I saw it.
I don't know if it's $100 for the cool.
That's not
$100. Looking at the pictures,
cool.
Now, you know,
that
if
better
I had,
be actual metal. If I had movie money laying around, like...
Yeah,
you know,
oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah,
$100, I'd drop that in a heartbeat. But, you know, for average Joe Blow on the street, $100 for a remote control.
See, do my kids eat for 2 weeks, or do I buy a Sonic screwdriver?
It would surprise me if it didn't drop down afterwards.
Back in the day, when I was... less responsible than I am now. And those questions came up. Slightly. You know, and literally it was a question of, I can buy this on Laserdisc, or I could pay the light bill. And the Laserdisc always won out. And then I couldn't watch it because they turned my lights off. Eventually, I figured that part of that out. But back in the day, I would probably weigh the $100 for the screwdriver and go, yeah. I mean, it's got 39 programmable features. That's more... pieces of equipment that I could ever possibly own at one point in time.
Oh yeah,
I mean this thing should be able to control my remote or my microwave.
Well, I'll tell you, if I got it, I would go around and program every device in my house that is remote control.
Yes,
not just the stuff in the living room. I'd go to the bedroom, do all that stuff. Go to the basement in the family room, do all that stuff.
Put an infrared sensor on your car
and just carry that thing around on my like a holster or something everywhere I want.
Use it at work.
Anyway, so we weren't going to spend that much time on this week, but we did! Moving on. Well,
What was the release date again we were talking
about? August 31st.
August 31st. Hey, that's not...
It could be a belated birthday
It could
present.
Be a belated or wedding present,
wedding.
Too.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
So Combo. If any of our listeners want to chip in, you can send checks, too. And I'll make sure that Keith gets it.
Yes, there you go.
I'd even give it to him unmolested. I'd be there when he opened it. Dude, you got to try it out on the microwave. But
so the other thing that's going on at San Diego Comic-Con this weekend, other than all the other plethora of pop culture stuff that was being released.
The Firefly
the
reunion panel?
That we are totally going to
avoid. Video game?
We promise we are avoiding this week. Yeah, because there's a lot of great real stuff that came out of Comic-Con. But we're going to focus on the Doctor Who stuff this week. Specifically,
not that there's really that much.
No, specifically, exactly. But specifically, that Matt, Karen, and Matt were all.
Matt, Karen, and Matt?
Matt, Karen, and Matt. Matt, Karen, and Arthur were all.
Which it's
all,
Arthur's first trip.
This is
Arthur's
first
trip.
Comic-Con.
Which, the news on that broke literally 22 minutes after we wrapped recording last week.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm kidding you
because
not. It
what
came
was,
up, I
was what
like,
was we said? No Doctor Who this year at Comic Con, is there?
Yeah. Nope. No, nothing at all.
All right.
Oh, Arthur Darvill's going to be there.
That's going to do it this week.
Missed it. So we had, I can't apologize for it.
No, we didn't even know Sunday that Matt and Karen were going to be there.
No.
We
I mean,
had
it was
no
just
idea.
Kind of a.
And then, yeah, I saw that where Arthur Darvill joining Matt and Karen, and I went, oh. I guess we should have researched that a little better because we didn't know Matt and Karen at least were going to be there. So
it wasn't until later in the week that
what
I.
What do you guys expect? We're
that.
Not Doctor Who Confidential.
It wasn't until I unlocked my Doctor Who sticker. That
I figured out there. Oh wait, there's going to be a panel.
I didn't even know. Yeah.
Thank
and
you,
then,
Get
It going. Wasn't until Friday when Sean told me. Well, that happened. That released right after we talked about it. Oh, okay. Well, I didn't get it. Anyway, at least those three were involved in...
Well, Ann Moffitt was there. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
You know, it doesn't do any good to talk with you. You just kind of interrupt every
Okay,
time
I'm here. Trying to give the news, and you guys keep talking about
I'm
Bond.
Trying to.
At least
I'm... The three were, and the very least, were on the Nerd Machine. Matt was on the fan favorite panel, and the three of them did the G4 interview with John Barrowman, Captain Jack himself, and then Moffat joined them for the Doctor Who official panel for BBC America.
Woo! And not much was information.
Not
was
much
given
was
at
said.
All. Nothing. There's go. It's entertaining. It's great. They don't say anything.
The things that I gleaned out of it was in the G4 interview was a lot of fun. If you get a chance to watch it online, it was neat because it was John Barrowman, who is a Doctor Who veteran now, interviewing the three new guys. And they had a lot of fun in their, you know, it was probably a 7-minute interview that aired on G4. But the thing that was funny was I didn't realize this. Karen Gillan was renting John Barrowman's flat the whole time she's been in Wales. And
oh, really?
So, yeah. So that comes up, and John stops just for a second and says, "Hey, by the way, what happened to my counter?" Come to find out, Karen was had some rap party for the show, and apparently the countertop got damaged. And John was calling her out in this interview. It was absolutely hilarious. It was like four old friends just sitting around talking. So that was a lot of fun. And then they did Nerd Machine this year, which is
so. This is still his current flat. This is
yeah. Well, he still owns it, but he rents it out because he's been in the States doing stuff. As
okay,
well,
so it wasn't like Blake pulling a. Oh, by the way, I used to live where you're living now.
John Barrowman still owns this. It sounds like he rents it out.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, he happened to be renting it.
Well,
Karen this time.
John, we're thinking about making a trip up to Cardiff for the Doctor Who Experience. We'd love to rent out your flat for a week.
Where'd you stay? Oh, John Barrowman's place. He stopped in a couple times.
Well, anyway, for some reason, the countertops were messed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we expect a hefty discount. Would that not be the end-all trip?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
So what'd you do this weekend? We went to Cardiff. We stayed at John Barrowman's house. And then we saw Doctor Who stuff. It was awesome.
But I can't get this smile off my face.
I'm grinning just thinking about it.
They were on the Nerd Machine, which is a panel that Zach, help me out, Zach...
Levi.
From
A.K.A.
Chuck. Does. And this year, they chose the Doctor Who cast to come on and do that, which is, that's not official Comic-Con sanctioned, but it's always done that same weekend, and the three of them are there. And my favorite moment from the weekend was this little girl asks Matt, what is your favorite, or what are you scared of the Weeping Angels? And Matt just kind of smiles a little bit, and he says, he stops and pauses, and he says, well, are you scared of the Weeping Angels? And she nods her head, says yes. And he goes, well, don't worry, because I'm going to fight them for us and protect us from it. And I was like, oh, that was the best answer ever. Yes. That is Matt so involved in the character, involved, and the perfect liaison and ambassador for Doctor Who. I was just, that blew my mind. And in fact, I think I posted that on Facebook and said, I think Matt Smith is now my favorite doctor based on that statement. So that was a lot of fun. And then
it's always fun when you see those moments where people can, because when you're dealing with children in particular who maybe have a little more difficulty distinguishing between this and that. I saw Brent Spiner at a convention who plays Data, and a child in the audience asked him, when they do the episodes where they have to remove your head, does it hurt? And he had to kind of tap dance around how to, you know, reply to that. And he came up with a very inventive way of doing it. But it's that kind of dedication to your fan base that you're not shattering the illusion, but you're also, you know...
giving a somewhat honest answer.
You're giving providing an answer. Exactly. That's just awesome.
Matt was also on the fan favorite panel that TV Guide puts on. And he was joined by such notables as Joe McHale, Nathan Fillion, the gal from Fringe. I don't remember a lot of the other ones, but
not Anna Torv. That's the gal from Chin.
Okay.
Not Anna Torv.
Oh, all right, very
that's
good.
The only other chick on the show.
There you go.
Oh yeah, that one.
But there were a
Astrid,
few on there
I think
as
is
well.
Her character's name.
Okay, There's a few in there. And then, and from what I understand, from what everything that I've read, pretty much all of the questions were directed at Matt. A few of them go in the other places.
And then there's a picture of Matt and Nathan together. Nathan,
yeah.
How much awesome is in that photo?
Yeah. Too much to contain in one photo.
But then the culmination
was... So let's talk about your man crush when you saw that photo.
Oh, God.
He printed it out. It's in his room. It's posted sure on it's the wall.
It's in my wallet.
And then, of course, the culmination
Sarah,
today...
Sarah, come home and go, why has this replaced my photo?
The culmination today, of course, was the Doctor Who panel. And we've seen the blogs from this. We've seen and as Keith said, there not a lot came out of this. I think one of the things came out this weekend. This wasn't on the panel, was that Matt.
This was just in an offhanded
essentially
interview.
Confirmed that the series will return at the end of August.
He gave which we he said it will return in August. He just didn't give a specific
date. Right,
sometime in August is what he said.
I think the other thing that I think we've sort of gleaned, I think we knew that this was going to be answered eventually. But it was interesting to hear Stephen Moffat when he was asked the question, if does Stephen know the name? And he said he did.
Yeah.
Of course, then he joked that it was something like Pete or Steve or something like that. But,
yeah.
But he it, obviously, that kind of steers me in the direction of that we're probably going to go down that road, whether it be Series 6 or some of the 50th anniversary spinoff stuff or whatever we do,
and
with the 50th.
We Stephen Moffat, you have to get friend of the show Simon Fisher Becker involved in the answer
to
that question.
Absolutely.
ScreenRant.com, they have a complete breakdown of the panel, and the fan question is on the question Doctor Who. And Stephen Moffat apparently said, quote, "It's been there from the start. He never gives his name. It's a tremendously important question, but I know why. And the name, and you will find out the truth." Now, rule one, Stephen Moffat lies. So, take that for what you will. Grain of salt. Keith just had his mind explode. What did you see?
I'm looking at this Comic-Con, or the...
thought we were going to have to revive him there.
I know.
The TV Guide fan panel. I'm looking at some of the highlights of it.
Yeah.
Matt Smith was asked... Or he said he had a community writer ask him to be on the show. And he was like, yeah.
I forgot about that, yeah.
That'd be so awesome. Sorry. And on that panel, I questioned the validity of this panel. Because one of the fan favorites is Sarah Wayne Callies. Sean, do you know who Sarah Wayne Callies is?
Not by name.
She's on The Walking Dead.
Oh, I do remember reading that.
The mom?
Yes.
Serious?
Yes. I remember seeing somewhere that they were listing out the list of people, and they're like, okay, we really don't think Lori, or it's Lori, isn't it?
Yeah, whatever.
So what you're saying is by putting her on there sort of cheapened the fact that Matt Smith and Nathan Fillion and Joel McKellar are fan favorites.
It definitely
apparently
takes
that's
it.
What he's, I guess what
in
but
my
Keith
mind
is
it does.
Saying is that, it, that, that...
And somebody from Teen Wolf and Maggie Q.
Yeah. Wait, they had a Teen Wolf guest?
Yes.
The entire panel is now invalid.
Teen Wolf's pretty popular right now.
But
I don't care.
The loudest cheers were still reserved for Matt Smith.
Do you remember the video I showed you? It's not for you! Okay. I have to put that in the notes and share it with the listeners.
You're right.
But it's not for you.
You're right. I have to temper my disappointment in the universe at large because...
Regardless, well, Matt Smith on Community would be one of the best things ever.
That would be huge.
That would be huge.
That would be very cool. Very, very cool.
And it sounds like he and Joel McHale hit it off.
Yes, yeah.
So that's always good.
And which one is Joel McHale?
He's
the lead.
Yeah, he's the lead in Community.
Okay.
He also does The Soup.
I just blanked on his character's name.
That's where I know him from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He still does The Soup, actually.
Yeah, he does. That's why they keep calling him Seacrest in the first season of Community.
I didn't get that joke.
Because he makes fun of Seacrest so much on The
All
Soup.
All the time.
In the first season, they constantly call him Seacrest.
Well, because Ryan Seacrest is another host on E! Shows on
right.
E! As well.
Yeah.
They're always knocking each other.
That part, I mean, I haven't watched The Soup in forever, but I just that I kept seeing him on Community going, I know this guy from somewhere. The hair, really, is what triggered it. But I,
okay. He's also in Spy Kids 4.
Haven't seen that
I didn't
one.
Know that one.
And he's in the unaired pilot of
the IT crowd
for the United States.
I don't know that one.
So. You haven't even seen the British version. So.
No.
Shame on you, Sean. Shame.
Hey, you know what? I'm all about my
you remember the funniest part of The Watch? The trailer for The Watch? The funniest parts? Richard Acolyte?
The funniest part was him shooting that alien over and over.
The guy with the afro?
Yeah.
I don't think you're saying his name right.
I don't think I am either.
Okay, telling me that the guy that was in that trailer was on that show that I haven't watched doesn't really help.
I'm saying the parts I laughed at the most of The Watch trailer was him.
But so anyway, that's what's going on at Comic-Con this weekend. And if there were any of our listeners that went to Comic-Con, we definitely would like to hear from you. It's pretty slim, I think, that any of our listeners would have a chance to go. But if you did, we'd love to hear from you and get some feedback about your experiences at Comic-Con. Sean, do you have something else?
Yeah, but it's not Doctor Who-related.
All right. Let's move on to feedback.
Feedback.
Well, that was lame.
That was short.
Lame rendition of the song. He knows we're short on time this week,
so he's got to cut out for all this IT crowd.
You know, every once in a while, you like a favorite TV show will start with the abridged version of the theme song, or there'll be like an abridged version of a commercial that you really like. And it's like the short version, and it just doesn't quite convey
the humor. It's like that new Star Wars Audi commercial that doesn't show the second half of it in the bar. It's like, what's the point of that?
Yeah, exactly.
So that was that version of the
feedback. That was that version.
I'm still working on the instrumental version. It'll be like Frasier. It'll be kind of very classy and just a couple of bars to let you know that this is where we're going with it.
Okay, sorry.
First up, Chrissy, dear Vortex Boys. Dear sweet Gallifrey, please, please, please don't bring up Doctor in Distress. I regret ever typing the title in the YouTube search. Dimensions in Time was hard enough to watch. At least that pretended to have some sort of plot line. Sorry, but when you were all talking about Doctor in Distress, it gave me nightmares. Just don't.
Phew! I have a question, Chrissy. I need to know. Now, you said, please don't bring it up. You regret typing the title into the YouTube search. So...
apparently she hadn't seen it before.
Did
we
you look it up before we brought it up? Or after? And if it was after, I'm sorry. but if it was...
our bad.
As Glenn would say, it's not for you! because if you did it before, that means, like, you're really a way more dedicated Whovian than I give you credit for, because I hadn't heard of it, so, I still hadn't looked it up. I had all week to, I didn't do it. I didn't do my homework, so, I'm just curious. But apparently it gave me nightmares, so, everybody else take that with a grain of salt. It comes with a warning label.
Traveling the Vortex. Just like Doctor Who Confidential, with more witty banter and less facts, and more nightmares.
Now nightmare-inducing.
Yes.
Now with Higgs particle.
All right.
Phew!
Keep going.
With that out of the way, I have feedback. Nice, tangenty feedback.
Do we ever get any other kind?
I want to comment on Odd Duck Phil's feedback from last week. First, congrats to Phil and the new Mrs. Odd Duck on their wedding, and all the best wishes.
This poor lady inherited his nickname.
Well, she's Mrs. Dr. Phil, so, you know. Mrs. Odd Duck.
Who just celebrated an anniversary, too.
They did, didn't they?
Congrats, Phil! It was like, what, 8? Wasn't that right?
I think. I'm a horrible Facebook friend, too.
I saw it on Facebook, I missed it.
I think maybe I commented on it. If I didn't, happy anniversary, Phil.
Well, I haven't yet, so happy anniversary, Phil, and Mrs. Dr. Phil.
Second.
It's like Mrs. Doctor, the girlfriend.
What?
Adventure Brothers.
Oh, Dr. Girlfriend.
Dr. Girlfriend.
Well, she, yeah, she's Mrs. the Monarch now, but that's why they've changed her. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Second, I lived in Florida for a short time a few years back, and we got hit with a tropical storm while I was there. I thought it would be a lot scarier, but I managed to drive to the store for a gallon of milk and some bread, and it wasn't too bad. Then again, I wasn't stressing out over a wedding and what to do with a bunch of guests, but it sounds like it went well, and there was Disney afterwards, which can never be a bad thing.
Wait, drove to the store for a gallon of milk, then you went to Disney? That's awesome!
I don't think that's what
Oh, you're
said.
Referring to Phil.
Phil.
Phil, well, Phil got to go to Disney. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Sorry.
Phil, I think Chrissy's calling you a wuss. It could just be the way this is worded, but I don't know. I'm stirring the pot.
Okay, her next bullet points. Demolition Derby. In my hometown, the Derby is the event of the summer. And the rodeo, though that's actually the next town over. Personally, if you've seen one Demolition Derby, you've seen them all.
I agree. I totally agree.
I've only seen one, so...
I'd have to see a second one before I could quantify that statement.
You know, can I be the authority on that? I've seen a lot of Demolition Derbies. I don't enjoy Demolition Derbies. I hate Demolition Derbies. I lived in a town that one few of the things you could do was go see a Demolition Derby. We went to the Demolition Derby because we could go there and drink beer. That's the only reason we went to the Demolition Derby. That we could be with friends and drink beer. And then there was, like, chaos going on, you know, off the side.
Yay, destruction.
Yeah, destruction. It's true. Once you've seen one, I think I watched the first Demolition Derby. I don't think I watched any of the rest of them because
the first Demolition Derby?
Well, it wasn't.
When they did it with, like, Flintstones cars. Big old rocks smashing into each other.
It took a long time for one person to tap out.
Driving the Stegosaurus mobile.
Quickly lifting your feet so you don't get your feet run over.
They're revving their engines. Pada, 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 pada.
Yeah. Once you've seen one, you've seen them all.
You know, I got Will. I'm ready to embark on my new career as a Demolition Derby manager. Will wants to drive, and I'm like, we can get you a big black car, and we're going to put the Batman logo on it with crossbones behind it. It will be awesome. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Get that image out of your head now.
I don't want to. That's kind of cool.
I would go to every Demolition Derby and support Will.
I would.
Drive-in movies. Sean mentioned these a few weeks back. We have a good handful of drive-in movie theaters near me, and I love seeing movies at the drive-in. When I was a kid, my grandparents lived right next door to a drive-in theater, and we could see the movie screen from our front porch, from their front porch. The screen used to be a lot bigger, but it got hit by a tornado some years ago, and they had to replace it with a smaller screen. Better than it being closed down entirely. There's really no point to this except, yay, drive-in movies.
Now, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that one of the ones that's near Chrissy's hometown is the one that was actually featured in Back to the Future 3.
Could be. I don't know.
Because they claim that they're in Hill Valley, wherever that's at, but it sure looked a lot like Utah. So,
could
I could be wrong. Is there one with Indians, Chrissy? Do a fact-finding mission for me on that. Get back to me, Lee.
Enough tangents. On to reviews.
Are we reviewing something? Okay.
We should just do a tangent episode. Have we talked about that before?
Just tangent episode and then feedback episode.
Here's 2 hours of us talking about everything but the show that we're supposed to be doing.
James Bond, Star Trek, Star Wars, Lost, no Lost.
Hey! The Crotons! I like the story well enough. It's not my absolute favorite second Doctor, but it's certainly not the Dominators. I think you can say that a lot for any second Doctor story. Well, at least it wasn't the Dominators.
You said that after Friday Night Who, and I was like, you know, oh, I like this. And you were like, yeah, it's really good. Not my favorite second Doctor story. And I said, I don't know. I don't think there have been any bad ones. And then you both looked at me and I went, oh, well, yeah, there is the Dominators. It's like it was so bad I've blocked it from my memory.
We looked at it. Really? No other? No bad ones?
It took me a minute.
The Doctor, Jamie, and Zoe all have some great moments. Love the Doctor's line about the Gobstoppers. The whole thing was pretty solid. Can't think of much else to say about it. Though I have a question. Is this the only black and white era story that the DVD is in cover is in color? When I went to buy it, it kind of threw me for a loop.
Sean's checking some of his.
The War Machines has color.
Well, the characters aren't in color.
No, that's true.
That's monochrome. Let me see. The characters are in color.
Here's what he's saying.
What's she saying? Dalek invasion.
Almost a monochrome that I allow.
Kind of monochrome. Yeah, they are really all monochrome.
Monochrome or black and white.
It's like they've colorized the Second Doctor and Zoe on the Crotons. Oh, there you go.
A little bit colorized, yeah. Seeds of Death.
Seeds of Death.
Now, that's original Seeds of Death, not special edition Seeds of Death.
That's purple. That doesn't count.
Yeah, but look, they've put the flesh color in there.
Not enough.
Yeah.
It's green.
Green hints.
Chrissy, as far as we can tell, to this extent...
To the ones we own.
To this extent.
Well, believe it or not, I don't own that one, but if I I'd have all of them.
Well, you should have bought this one.
It was all right.
Well, you can go back and buy it. It's still $20.
Not anytime soon.
It's not $20 anytime soon?
No, I won't be buying it anytime soon.
Oh. Uh-oh. You're running out of money?
Yeah.
Oh. You should have said something. I'd have bought the Daleks one, too.
Well, that's okay.
Oh, okay.
I didn't run out of money until after I bought it, and then realized I was out of money. So.
Oh, all right.
At that point, it was too late. Anyway, yeah, well, as far as we can tell, that's the only true blue colorized version of the cover out there. And no, we're not getting into the colorized debate at this point.
No.
How do you feel about covers, though? Now, is that okay?
Yeah, covers are fine.
I'd still almost prefer a black and white cover.
Oh, good God. Keep reading.
Land of the Dead. You sure you want me to keep reading?
We got to get through this.
Come to think of it, you know, I didn't know what color her outfit was. But, I mean, because obviously it's black and white, but seeing that...
took some liberties there.
Well, but that totally makes sense.
It could have been red.
It totally makes sense. That's what color would have been.
It does.
Land of the Dead, or as I've termed it, Doctor Who meets Pocahontas meets Jurassic Park in Alaska with gratuitous references to Earthshock, and this a recast as Grandmother Willow. Yeah, that's all you need to know, seriously. Was James Cameron called in to write this thing? I know you three are fans of Cameron, but his storytelling originality leaves much to be desired.
Hear, hear.
I think Glenn and I are on the same page. Sean is the giant fanboy, not the three of us.
I think I'm the only one that's a huge fanboy of Cameron.
He's done
some good stories, but no.
It's been a while.
She hit the nail on the head there as far as that goes.
There are issues. I could do a whole podcast. No, I'm sorry. I could do a whole podcast defending Cameron's storytelling. I won't because I agree with you, especially Avatar. For the most part, it was... You know, yeah, it was ripped off, but that's not like it's an unknown story.
Ferngully.
It was Pocahontas. It was Ferngully. It was Dances with Wolves. It was, you know, my review covered that pretty well, I thought. I don't remember if that was on the website or not, but yeah. So, no, I won't defend that, but I still like him. He's entertaining. Not like Michael Bay's entertaining.
I'll give James Cameron credit enough that he has more substance than Bay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, much more substance.
A lot more substance. Honestly, it may be reused, but at least it's there.
Michael Bay should direct Demolition Derbies. That would be awesome. Because those cars would explode in slow motion and flip upside down a whole bunch and then land, and there might be a giant robot. And live, that would be cool. But I wouldn't have to sit through a plot. I'd just get to go and watch things blow up, and then I could go home.
She finishes with, "That's all this week, Chrissy. P.S. That website in my email signature is my grad school portfolio. Don't care if you announce it on the podcast. Maybe someone will see it, be impressed by it, and give me a job. Hope springs eternal." Well, then we'll give it.
Give it out.
It's chrissyjohnson.yolasite.com/
Y-O-L-O?
Y-O-L-A-S-I-T-E.
Yola site.
Yola site.
Yola site.
Yola site.
Yola.
Gotcha.
Chrissy Johnson.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Johnson & Johnson Company. I don't know.
No, that wasn't even funny. I don't know why I gave you a sympathy giggle.
Yeah, I did too.
It made sense in my head. There are times when my brain says things that make sense.
Who else sent us feedback this week?
Phil.
Who writes, comment question. Hey, who peekins? Skipping the intro, straight to the item list. One, back to soul crushing. Sorry, I needed to head back to Children of Earth for just a second. But hearing you all talk about it made me think a couple more things. A friend of mine once said good science fiction is, hey, we've got machines that think. Great science fiction is, hey, we've got machines that think. And here are the consequences. This is definitely great science fiction. And I have to side with Glenn on the whole death before surrendering the children. To turn them over is to invite the 456 to return again and ask for 20% or 50% or all of them. Handing them over might buy us time, but we really don't know how much they may move up their timetables as this new recreational drug really takes off. Better to die on my feet than to live on my knees, I guess. And as for Jack, would it have been better if he'd grabbed someone else's child and used them instead? Sacrificing my child or grandchild to save the human race is a heart-wrenching decision, but I'd feel much more inhumane if I sacrificed someone who wasn't mine and inflicted that pain on their parents and family. In the heat of the moment, I have no idea what I'd do, and again, I think that's a sign of how great Children of Earth is. Any comments?
No, hear, hear.
All right. Number two, Spaceballs. This was my favorite Mel Brooks movie when I was like 12. Come on, guys, this one's not held up well. The sci-fi parodies are fun and all, but Spaceballs cannot be compared to either Blazing Saddles or Young Frankenstein. It's not Men in Tights or Dracula Dead and Loving It, don't get me wrong. But just look at it without the nostalgia glasses.
That means it's good.
After I read this, I did. I took my glasses off, and I think he's right. It's probably not held up as well as we remember it holding up. It's been a while since I've watched it. Young Frankenstein is still, for me, the pinnacle of Mel Brooks films. I like it better than Blazing Saddles.
I would agree.
But I still think Spaceballs is up.
I would agree with that statement that it's not... You can't compare it to those two because they are timeless. However, as dated as Spaceballs is, I still get as much laughter out of it for myself as I did, 20 years ago when I first saw it.
I actually saw Spaceballs in the theater.
I did too.
And I think it's gotten funnier.
Yeah, I would agree.
That sounds really strange to say that.
I've probably seen
Spaceballs. As your exposure to sci-fi grows, the funnier Spaceballs gets.
Well,
I was pretty steeped, but then you can still see that trend repeat.
I've probably seen Spaceballs two dozen times, and I still see things in it that I missed or think is funny or funnier the second time. I just, all the time. I don't know why.
It's just one of those things. Number three, Disney again. This one is almost exclusively for Glenn.
Yay!
Make sure you go check out the PhilharMagic at Magic Kingdom.
I did.
You don't like 3D.
No, I did.
And if you can make it to Animal Kingdom, try and hit the safari tour early before it gets too hot and the animals lose a lot of activity.
Yeah, we did that too, and I don't like animals. So, Phil, I have been there, actually. We're going back within the next year. My family. We went...
I keep trying to weasel my way into this
we
vacation.
We went 3 years ago. And PhilharMagic is my favorite attraction at Magic Kingdom. It's my all-time favorite.
He was telling me about it on
the phone.
It sounds amazing.
It's incredible. It is so much fun. It's one of those 4D experiences where it's a 3D film, short film essentially, with music and interactive, when there's air blowing, it blows air in your face, your seats rumble, those kind of things. Amazing, incredible.
And it's
I won't spoil much for you, but it's Donald gets a hold of the Sorcerer's Apprentice hat.
Oh.
And he ends up traveling through all these different Disney movies to music. It's incredible. It's so cool. Anyway, sorry.
And The Lion King show is fantastic.
I didn't get to see that one.
Okay, guys, I'm out. Have a good one. Odd Duck Phil. And as always, Phil, thank you. And we did get some wedding pics from Phil, and I will get those posted on the website tomorrow. There, I said it. Tomorrow.
Now tomorrow. He has to do it.
Now I'm on deadline.
That'll be Monday for listeners.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Thanks for quantifying that, yes. Because that would have given him 2 days, technically.
That's right.
No, Monday. Monday. Somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Well, shall we move on to our reviews?
Oh, let's do it.
Of the croutons, I mean crotons.
We say that in jest, but it... Oh, go ahead.
There were several accented attempts to say
it. Croutons. Almost sounded like they said croutons a couple
absolutely,
times.
But it, we're not. We're. I don't think we're.
We enjoyed this.
Yeah, we're not putting down this episode.
It's just the title is close enough. When the TARDIS arrives on the planet of the Gons, the Doctor and Jamie and Zoe discover a world ruled and enslaved by the Crotons. The brightest Gons are always chosen to serve as companions of the Crotons and are never seen again. The Doctor and his friends decide to put a stop to their rule, but in doing so, inadvertently unleash the true power and terror of the Crotons instead.
Salad dressing!
What kind?
Seasoned herb. Ranch. Oh wait, ranch. Salad dressing.
Whatever kind of salad dressing is
Caesar.
Actually,
Caesar.
Oh, I'll take Caesar over ranch any day.
Go away. Ranch is the most awesome.
Oh, only the most bland, the most tasteless.
Followed only to blue cheese.
I like blue cheese.
Oh, blue cheese is so good.
I'd actually have to go honey mustard.
Oh, I don't want that. I don't want that on my salad.
Give me Paisano's Italian.
It is the wrong combination. Honey mustard on a ham. Honey mustard not on a salad. No.
Ugh. Yeah, I agree. Ugh.
Depends.
Do you have ham on this salad?
Sometimes. There's different varieties of honey mustard. Like, I mean, there's the sweet honey mustard, which dressing normally is, and then there's the slightly tangier tart honey mustard that you would like dip nuggets in. And I don't like that one. I like the sweet.
You know what? I can't. I totally abhor.
Really?
French.
Oh, okay. Yeah, French is every great blue moon. I'll get this weird craving for French, and then I talk myself out of it.
Oh no! I'll even do Thousand Island before I do that. Well, that's our review of the croutons. What'd you guys think of this one?
It was enjoyable. It was pretty standard par Second Doctor, in my opinion. It was. Heads above the Dominators, but not quite as good as some others.
I would agree. I would agree.
There's some great ideas in this, some good storytelling. It's nice and concise compared to some of other Troughton stories. I think it's really well thought out, really well acted, really well written. Overall, I have no major complaints about it.
I think what we found is with William Hartnell's era, as the first Doctor, his run is pretty uneven. There'll be ones that we absolutely enjoy, and there's ones that we just really don't like that well. And then you come to Patrick Troughton, all the stuff that we've reviewed, it's been pretty even. The entire run, with the exception of the Dominators, has been pretty even.
And still,
there are some that are a lot better than others, don't get me wrong. But...
And even Keith found something to like in the Dominators.
Well, I found two things to like. I liked the Doctor and the Dominators, and I liked the Quarks.
I liked the Quarks as well. They were quirky. But
that's what I liked about them.
But I totally agree. But, yeah, the Patrick Troughton as the Doctor is always enjoyable to watch, no matter what you watch.
He really is.
And
that's the consistent.
That's what makes this one shine as well, is because I think there's a lot of focus on the Second Doctor in this one. Whereas we have had ones where we've kind of split the crews off, or we've done, you know, our... divided up the story, or we've stepped away to kind of further the plot with the inhabitants of a certain planet. Or this one, really, it stays focused on. We get the Gons.
The Gons.
We do get those every once in a while, where we just get the Gon politics or what's going on with the Gons.
But they're not very
most
long.
Most of the time, there, we're really focusing on the Second Doctor and Zoe, which is really
a good pairing. Mm-hmm. The two people of this TARDIS crew. And of quite a few TARDIS crews, at least of what I've seen, aside from Romana, that are on almost equal footing.
Yeah. Intellect-wise,
yes. Intellect-wise, yes. That's what I mean.
I still get the impression that there's this apprenticeship type approach with her.
There is.
Where with Romana, it wasn't quite that. It was more of a...
They were more equals.
Closer to equals.
Romana is the one exception, I think.
Well, yeah,
Romana was
very much, they were more colleagues.
There you go.
But
that's what I'm looking for.
Because she was...
Fresh out of the academy
and didn't have any real galactic experience under her belt. It was still kind of an apprentice situation.
But only in that Mary Tam season for me.
You think?
Yeah. Later when Lola Ward comes around, they really feel like they're very close to equal footing. It's just really colleagues.
I wonder how much of that is just the personality that Lola Ward brought to
it. It could be. But I think the Doctor still comes across as more experienced. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But there's still more of a level footing there, I think. Whereas with Zoe, it's always been kind of an apprenticeship, as though she's learning. She's very intelligent. The Doctor recognizes that, but there's still that teacher-learner type relationship between her and he, I think.
Yeah. I can see that. But still, regardless, aside from Romana, of what I've seen, Zoe is the closest to an equal to a peer as a companion he's had, from what I've seen.
Until River.
I don't count in.
River's different because it's not an intellect equal. It's really kind of an odd relationship equal. But she's more on the same level as the Doctor in a different way.
And that's only because we're at the end of her line. Right. As we move closer, she will, I would hope, would become more ignorant. Not as known to all of this stuff.
I think when we see Let's Kill Hitler. I think you see that divide.
Yes.
You see that divide.
Absolutely.
And that they obviously grew to be more equal. But
what's interesting is that, and there are two things that I've learned from this podcast. Well, not just two, but in particular dealing with Patrick Troughton's era. One, I knew I liked Patrick Troughton, but my only exposure to Patrick Troughton, honestly, had been the Five Doctors. Later, I came to the Three Doctors and then the Two Doctors, and I'd seen all the other stuff, but I'd never really sat down and watched a Patrick Troughton episode. And I'm finding exactly what you...
Even though I owned a few.
And I'm finding exactly what you guys have said, is that, for the most part, he's always good. He's always entertaining. He's always a lot of fun. And he's very, very rapidly crawling up there among my favorite doctors, just as like, all right, it's Troughton. You know, I mean, just this giddy excitement. The other part of this, you talk about Zoe and her intellect. And I think it's kind of ironic that we get Adric, who's, in a way, this supposed to be this carbon copy of Zoe, that he's got the math intellect, and he's supposed to be kind of on par. And in a way, I don't know, maybe they were just because Romana and Canine and the Superbrains had left the TARDIS Trust, and so now we're going to bring in Adric and kind of start weaning you off the super intelligent companions. But yet, he's supposed to be a brain. He's supposed to be a very big brain, and Nisa as well. And yet, neither one of them come across the same way that Zoe does in that relationship. Not only with the fact that it's a different doctor, but just they never once come to that level of...
Somehow, though, Nisa does in the Big Finish audios.
More so
than she does in the television adventures.
Yeah, and I think that was just...
Well, she also gets some more one-on-one time with the Doctor.
That's what you're not dividing your time, because at any other time that Nisa's there with the Doctor, it's Tegan there or Adric there as well. So yeah,
maybe that's the same problem that Adric suffers from.
I think it's distracting.
If he was there alone and didn't have Tegan and Nisa to go off of, maybe his character would have elevated a little bit more.
And
I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting idea.
I don't think those other characters, the quote-unquote dumber characters, are as strong as Jamie. I think Jamie is such a well-written character that they can send him off, let the Brain Trust go off and do their thing, and he's left behind to do what he needs to do.
Well, and it's fun to see how, especially in this one, he's given this great thing where he's trapped in the ship, and you literally get to see him figure things out.
Yes.
I don't want to be mean to Jamie, but it's a little bit like watching the rat get out of the maze.
Well, he's a quote-unquote primitive.
Yeah, well, but here's what's interesting. If Leela had been stuck in this situation, she would have bashed something with a rock, grabbed a croton, held it hostage, and poured dressing all over it. I mean, that would have been her way out. She literally would have smashed her way out of that ship and not felt bad about it at all.
Yeah.
Jamie was kind of still, I'm not dumbing down Leela, that's just the way her persona is. But Jamie's kind of coming at it from the,
okay, now what? I mean, he's trying to put...
Well, I think that's
if I was in the doctor's shoes, how would he do this?
I think that's his experience with the doctor. And how far into his run is this? Into Jamie being on board the TARDIS. When does Jamie come on?
Remember where this falls.
The last one is 50.
This is 47.
So it's way toward the end.
So he's... Yeah. And we've seen in 50... In War Games, how much he's grown from early.
Yeah.
I mean, I view that as continuation.
Well, I think the comparison here, though, that you have to look at is that Jamie and Leela are both primitives. But
it's relative.
Jamie is less primal than Leela was.
Yes.
Leela is very primal. Jamie's not as primal. And I think that's where the difference is Jamie is, while he's ready to fight and ready to use instinct, he is still a little more apt to try to logically figure something out or think his way out of a situation. Whereas, as you said, Leela, her first instinct is to go to her primal instincts and go, you know, take the hostage and battle her way out.
Although it's interesting, the first thing Jamie does in the episode is hand-to-hand combat against a Gond.
Oh, yeah, sure. Like, I'm not saying he doesn't have
it. I love how they're trying to wave him off. He's like, no, I got this. I love Jamie. He's so great.
Which, and relative to who he's paired up with, we would be primitive compared to Zoe or even Captain Jack,
just from
the time period we're from, because they're so much further ahead of than us.
Yeah, some of us don't even believe we'll get to Mars in our lifetime.
That's right. at least we found the Higgs particle.
I think
Higgs particle.
I think the Gonds are well realized in this. The basically guinea pigs for the Crotons, who are trying to basically orchestrate an escape off this planet, is really all it boils down to. Is they have to find
leave.
Yeah, they have to find somebody with enough brain power to get them off the planet. And so this society has culminated into this, like, almost monarchy of the Crotons being the rulers and the governors, and the Gorns essentially de-evolving, because I get the impression that at one time, you know, they studied science and they had all of this mass society that has essentially been dumbed down because it's not allowed anymore.
They only rely on the Crotons.
Right, which ultimately is the Crotons' mistake, because to me, had they allowed that to flourish, they'd have found the intelligence that they needed sooner and could have got off the darn planet.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really interesting.
Which, and this one, for me, more than any other Who, for whatever reason, I must have been in just a weird mindset, that the Doctor swoops in and completely crushes this entire society. This society has built for generations based on the Crotons, and now they have to start entirely from scratch. I would love to see how the Gorns handled that.
Yeah, but it's more of a breaking of the chains, you know. It's more of the...
It ends
the
up that way, but initially it's like, wait a minute, this is all these people know.
Yeah,
it's not until the Gorns themselves start rebelling against the Crotons.
But it's like taking the cap off that's been placed on them and not allowed them to flourish the way they should. It's like removing that cap and knowing that they will then flourish on their own. So
it's parallel, I think, to Christopher Eccleston in The Long Game. Is it The Long Game? When he's like, this is not where this is supposed to be.
Oh, yes.
You know, something is stunting that there's an outside influence here. It's in those moments that the Doctor really has no problem stepping in and going, aha, and throwing off the
yokes
of oppression.
I never thought of it in that perspective.
It's more when,
that makes sense.
You know, the society themselves have deemed it to be this way. Then he's a little more hesitant about whether, I think it's monstrous or not, this is how they do it. But because this was an outside influence, he was okay with it.
Not to mention, though, it's almost accidental when the second Doctor does it. It's purposeful when the ninth Doctor does it.
Yeah, that's true, too.
But I agree.
But he still shows up and is like, that's not right. We must investigate. I mean, he still consciously makes that decision.
Sure, yeah.
Regardless of whatever the outcome.
Now, so, I really want to call them the Crotons.
There are accents in this story. Oh, it sounds like they say the Crotons.
The Crotons are our leaders. Snicker, snicker, giggle.
Dry bread.
I'm not crazy. The Crotons crashed, basically, on this planet, mm-hmm. wiped two of their party out, and that's why they've set everything up to try and...
Because they're only half the crew that they need.
Well, they have to regrow.
Yeah.
The crew.
In fish tanks.
Yeah. Out of a vat of... Yeah. So,
primordial ooze.
I mean, don't get me wrong. This is, you know, thank you, Dr. Phil, for pointing out, this is Bob Holmes' first story for Doctor Who, mm-hmm. and everything that we said, it's well-paced, it's got some grand ideas in it.
It's got some pretty good cliffhangers for some second good, Doctor.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Now, would any other Doctor put in this situation have sympathy for the Crotons? That, I mean, they are essentially marooned, and I'm not saying what they're doing is right, but they're marooned here, and they're trying to get home. That's their end goal. They're not being malevolent for the sake of being evil. They're doing it as a means to an end. That doesn't make it right, but, I mean, this is how we need to get off the planet, and we keep hoping that we'll get somebody that meets the mustard, and so far they haven't. Now, yeah, they're killing them at the end of it. That's totally wrong.
Right.
But, I mean, are there other doctors you think that if Dr. X was plugged into this scenario would maybe go, dude, I'll give you a lift home, just leave these people alone?
Well, let me answer that based on an explanation from you guys that I didn't quite get from this. I got the impression that this isn't the only Crotons in existence. This just happens to be this ill-fated crew.
Right.
Yes.
So... I think any doctor then that came in there, if they recognize that this isn't genocide by taking them out, it's basically like when a bear kills a child, mauls a child, and it's perfectly instinctual for them to do it, and it might have been out of fear or something like that, you shoot the bear, you kill the bear. Same thing with a dog. If a dog bites a child, you consider it vicious, you put the dog down. I think that any doctor along those same lines would realize that the thousands of years of suppression and capital punishment and essentially elimination, because what they do is after they didn't need them anymore, they just kill them. It wasn't even like a mercy killing. It was just like, you know, I mean, they stumbled out because they drained their brains, essentially. Maybe it was right. A mercy killing, but they're still killing and suppressing the society. So I don't think so. I think any as misguided as it seems, I don't see any doctor stepping in and going, no, the end means shouldn't be death. So,
Keith?
I would agree. Glenn brought up a lot of good points. And because they're not the only Crotons, and I also almost got a more mechanical than organic impression from them, that I think that's... Any other doctor probably would have reacted the same way.
I'm just curious.
You put it forth. What do you think?
I could see the 10th doctor, maybe, you know, kind of...
He would certainly contemplate it.
He would contemplate it and maybe give them the ultimatum of...
He'd give them the choice.
You know, leave these people and we'll, you know, we'll figure something out before he destroyed them. I don't know.
I would think would give them the benefit of the doubt.
I could definitely see David Tennant's doctor doing it. I could possibly see Matt Smith's doctor doing it.
He's never encountered anything like that in his run yet.
I don't know that any of the others would have.
Yeah,
that's true.
I haven't seen
that in his character yet.
I also don't...
A little bit in the whale.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm also not going Mary Whitehouse here. Death by hydrochloric acid? I mean, is that harsh? That they're breathing that in and that's what undoes them? I mean, yikes. Now, once again, the doctor manages to not get his hands dirty. He made Zoe do it. But I was a little taken aback by that. Yes, I mean, they're mechanical and it's just breathing hoses. There's nothing gruesome about the way it was done.
Right.
But the idea of it, that just this thing sucking down... And then falls over dead and starts smoking.
It was sulfuric acid. It wasn't hydrochloric.
Oh, yeah, sulfuric.
Yeah, sulfuric.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like I said, 10 and 11, maybe.
Maybe. It would be intense character to do so, I think. To at least explore that option.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then they'd smash him with a hammer. Which... the guys, let's talk about the Gons for just a minute. The guys are, you know, we're out there, we're going to tear up the teaching room. What have you got?
Guesses. We're going to smash the machines.
Which, and even the doctor chastises them.
Yeah.
Atomic cannon, better than...
Yeah, an atomic laser, maybe.
That's not the way to go about it. What are you doing?
I loved the role reversal, where even though we did split Team TARDIS up again, and so we've got the Doctor and Zoe off doing their thing, and we talked a little bit about this on Friday Night Who, but the... You know, of all people, we pair Jamie up with the quote-unquote scientist who's trying to formulate acid. Yeah. And some great scenes there. How much do you put in? I don't know. Put all of it in. Okay. I have no idea. Well, what if it explodes? Well, then it'll blow up.
Then it just explodes.
So, I mean, of all the lab assistants, you want Jamie? I mean, he was available. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Zoe are off, you know... Doing the rebellion thing, basically, and collecting everybody from... we're going to, you know, pick apart the pillars that hold up this gigantic whatever this is. And it was an interesting twist to put on that. Yeah. Instead of the Doctor being the one in the lab cooking up something. I thought that was really cool. And I loved Philip Maddock.
He had a lot smaller role than I thought he would, though.
Yeah, because we knew he was in this from all the other things that we talked about him in. All the previous ones, and so knowing this was coming, and then, oh, there he is, and then he really didn't, unfortunately, get to do much. It was his first outing, so but he still had that, and I think maybe part of this was the way it was written, part of it I think was his portrayal of it, that he's, you know, we talk about the Doctor stumbling into the political, here we go again, he's on some planet X with the political arena, but this was done in such a way that this guy maybe wasn't power hungry and wasn't actively out to ruin society, so many of these guys seem to do.
I would agree.
He was actually acting in the best benefits of the Gons from his perspective. Mm-hmm. And we never really got the resolution to find out whether or not the guy's son would come back and challenge him and if he would lay down peacefully or not. But I kind of got the impression that he would. Just, you know, my two cents on that.
Yeah, but, no, I would agree.
But again, a very, very well done bit there.
It's a good story overall. There was no... I mean, I got chided for playing Fix-It Feelings.
I was teasing.
I got slightly distracted because all night things from Comic-Con were coming through. In.
Yeah.
And of course, when we're on Twitter, it's really hard to, when you see a link to something, go, I'll forget about this later if I don't do it now. Yeah. So that's what had happened, and I got there. And I had just downloaded it for my phone earlier in the day, and I thought, I'll give it a try here and see if the gameplay was better. But I think I only played for like a minute and then gave it
up. Oh, yeah. I don't want to give the... I'll retract it now.
Because it's regular. Actually, no, the comment was... Vortex Glenn starts playing Wreck-It Ralph, and suddenly the ceiling cone falling in on the Doctor. And so you weren't even doing it in such a way that I was bored or was disinterested. But then Chrissy sort of gleamed that you're not bored yet.
No, I'll retract that.
Of course, Boy takes the opposite. What's this game?
Yeah, John gets interested in the Wreck-It Ralph game.
Now he happened to pull up the demo for it, and I looked over and he was playing it, and I giggled to myself, and I'm intrigued now. So if there's an Android app for it, or a Mac app, I totally want it. But
there's not a Mac app, but you can go to the website and play it.
Play the Flash version on the web, yes. And we'll include that in the show notes.
I just put a note in,
but
which I'm totally stoked about. No,
that's a whole other conversation.
I
think we liked the salad and the croutons and the dressing, even though it might have been,
even though we don't agree with dressing to use
Caesar versus Thousand Island.
I think we all would have preferred better dressing, but we enjoyed the salad. So.
And Zoe had a very short skirt.
A very short.
She did. Yeah.
This is one I would, if I found used or decently priced, I would pick up.
It's only $20 at Best Buy.
That's pretty good, actually.
Decently priced for Doctor Who. Of course, it's one disc. You get two discs, and you start talking $30. But
yeah.
I'd
probably go down to 15 for it.
I don't know. There's nothing else I could say about this. Enjoyable.
I didn't like the design of the Crotons. I can say that. If I'm going to be nitpicky about anything, and that is, I think it's a very nitpicky thing.
It is.
I would
because
agree.
Because Troughton, in particular, Doctor Who's always had insert character into Robot X. Kind of, I mean, we've got the Daleks, which kind of laid the wet cement, so to speak, of that. And then, you know, the Cybermen, and then the War Machines, and then the Krotons, and then the Quarks. And then, I mean, there's always a mechanical something lurking in the wind.
That's what I'm very accepting, though, because this is the design of these are very reminiscent of the time for me.
Yeah.
So it's almost I'm actually quo. Very forgiving because it's almost like this was kind of the popular thing in the 60s. Because
especially.
This design is similar to the Quarks in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, just smaller Quarks and the arms swing out instead of having the Robbie the Robot arms.
Yeah.
Or not even Robbie the Robot, but a robot from Boston Space, as Keith was pointing out on Friday Night Who, having those type of arms, which. I envisioned the whole thing as silver, and on the box they've colored the arms black.
I thought those were black in the episodes too.
I had envisioned them as
well. Otherwise, they'd look like dryer hoses.
Yeah.
Well, we can't have
isn't
that.
Isn't that essentially what they were?
No one would pay $20 if we put dryer hoses on the cover.
All right, let's move on to this next stinker.
The stinker.
The land of the dead.
The land of the dead.
No more croutons.
I'm waiting for my laptop to boot back up. Saving battery.
I sprung it on him.
You did. All right. The land of the dead. Landing in Alaska, the Doctor and Nyssa encounter a group of people in a most unusual house, cut off not only by the harsh climate, but by their individual secrets and obsessions. Billionaire Sean Brett.
Darn, I was really hoping you were done there.
Is utilizing chunks of the local area to construct a shrine to his dead father. But when deadly creatures start roaming outside and a terrifying discovery is made inside the house, the Doctor realizes that Brett has unleashed an unimaginably ancient force.
Not even going to give it
that. Nope.
Way.
No. At all. Nope. Oh. Which, okay. Decidedly, I'm glad we've approached Big Finish, and I have approached Big Finish over the years in the way that we have now. Because had I started from the beginning...
Oh, I would have given up.
And I had to do Phantasmagoria and this story. Now, to be fair, I have not heard Whispers of Terror. But
Whispers of Terror is markedly better than either of those two stories, but a lot of it is because of Colin Baker's performance.
Well,
honestly,
and I enjoyed Davis. I love some of his
was the
stuff.
He was the best part of this story.
No, I don't think so. But
well, if there's good at this story, it's him.
Sirens of Time was fine because it was three of the Doctors, and it was broken up, and it was enjoyable, and everything culminated, and it was a clever story. It wasn't a fantastic story, but it was a clever story. And then we got Phantasmagoria, which we've already given a review of Phantasmagoria. Everybody knows we weren't thrilled. We weren't thrilled by it. So then Whispers of Terror might have brought me back up and kept me intrigued if it is in fact a good story. And then to turn around and do Land of the Dead, I'm like Keith said, I probably would have given up. I don't know, maybe not, because back when I started listening to Big Finish, I was getting intermittently because I was getting used copies here and there, and I would download it from the internet occasionally, but the things that I were getting were enjoyable and a lot of fun, and I was also starved for new Doctor Who.
When
new
the
classic
world?
Doctor Who, for that matter. And so maybe I would have stuck with it. But, boy, there's some really, really, really lame start to this series, and it's too bad.
Wilderness Years, and we've said before, any Who is good Who. But there are...
It's a struggle saying that with this story.
There are a few that really push the bounds of reality with that statement. And maybe it's because we all know there's so much better out there that winds up becoming the measuring stick. If we didn't have any Who and we had this, would we be okay with
it? Our bar would be set so low that...
Well, but that's just it. If you came to Doctor Who through this story...
Well,
would it be one of those that you'd be one and done?
Story.
Yeah, I mean, would you be one and done?
Yeah,
I probably would be.
Would it be enough of a hook that you'd go, well, I'll give it a couple more, like a kind of a bad pilot, or would it be a, ugh, I'm never watching that again? I mean, quite honestly. And I applaud Big Finish for doing, and this story in particular does some of those things that, well, we just can't do on TV. You can't go to Alaska. You can't do a location shoot like that. So when you get the opportunity...
You can't get a skeleton like that
to look
good.
Yeah, you can't get a living skeleton to wander the halls and smash through things. So when you get the opportunity, it's kind of like animation. What do you want to do? I want to do this. Okay, and you go and you do it because you can. But just because you can doesn't necessarily follow that you should. And I wish there had been... I don't know who the script editor was at the time that was in charge at Big Finish that went, really?
I brought my book this week, Sean. Oh, I might be able to tell you.
Why don't you look that up for us, Glenn?
Are there not script editors?
I don't know if they do or not. I kind of assume producers.
Stephen Cole was the producer on this one. So.
The producer or is he the writer?
He's the executive producer, excuse me. He also wrote it. Jason.
Well, that explains.
Jason Hay-Gallery and Gary. Well, this might defend it a bit, because in the trivia notes here, it does say that Stephen Cole was writing children's books based on BBC working Walking with Dinosaurs at the time, hence the use of fossils in the story. Also, this was his first script for Big Finish, and the script was written in about a week, because Sylvester wasn't available to record The Fearmonger number 5. And it says, and I didn't want another Collins story too soon after Whispers. So that was part of the reason why this might have just fallen down, because it might have just been done too quickly.
But look how quickly other Who stories have been written.
Douglas Adams, by Douglas Adams, though. I mean, come on.
Yeah, because you've got something. I've never seen or read any of Stephen Cole's work.
Also, for Big Finish, Stephen Cole's done the Apocalypse Element, which is one that we're getting ready to come up
Doctor,
on.
Before, right?
Sixth Doctor.
Okay.
He's done The Wormery with the Sixth Doctor and Iris Wildtime. He's done Fitz's story with the Eighth Doctor, which is part of A Company of Friends. He's done The Whispering Forest and Kiss of Death, which are both Fifth Doctors. Now, I'll be honest. I haven't listened to any of those. I started Apocalypse Element.
I started Apocalypse.
But then I backed off, because at the time that I was listening to these, I was just plowing through numerically, and then realized by the time we get around to reviewing them, I won't remember any of these details. So I decided to wait and kind of get them a little bit closer. So the first part that I heard of Apocalypse Element was pretty good.
Okay.
So,
and that's a Dalek story, right?
And it is a Dalek
story. That's Dalek Empire 2. Part 2.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Loosely connected.
It's loosely connected.
It's Daleks.
But it's part of the Dalek Empire series that Big Finish recognizes as the first four Dalek stories that they did
wind up having loosely based events that apparently play into the Dalek Empire.
Right. Okay.
Saga.
We're not going to have any doctors. Anyway, so
they stretch.
It's a stretch. Anyway.
All right.
I wish I'd never brought that up. I really am sorry that I did that. As far as Land of the Dead goes, I'm looking forward
to the next ones more so.
Yeah. I'll be honest. When I was initially putting the schedule together, as we had been doing the Paul McGann Big Finish, we'd kind of been lumping two or three stories together in a pop. So I went and lumped 2, 3, and 4 in the Big Finish line together.
Excuse me.
And we were going to do that as an episode. And then I thought about it, and I was like, wait a minute, I didn't really like Phantasmagoria, and I really didn't like Land of the Dead. Do we want to put those two together in the same... And so that's why I decided to break them apart. Now, I wish I did my homework a little bit better, because apparently there is a Return of the Croutons story. And we could have done a whole archive about the croutons, but we could have had a salad. Instead, we got dinosaur bones and psychic Nyssa.
A salad buffet.
Honestly, for me, the idea of the monster in this story, I didn't have a problem with. It was everybody else in this story.
I didn't think the monster was that imaginative.
It was different. Oh, look, it's different. There's the idea that it's this creature that is all skeleton. It became so advanced that it ate its own skin and flesh. And those ideas were cool. There just wasn't enough of it to carry the entire story.
Yes.
And then toss in the Alaskan tribal ideals and all of that stuff that I'm like, oh.
Which was weak. Because
it was really
if they
weak.
Had explored that a little deeper, It would have made more sense for it to be there as an element, but they didn't go deep enough with it. They didn't connect it well enough.
Well,
They used it as a superstition around this story.
And then they're also juggling the two guys, Brett and the other guy, with the parents, and didn't see that coming.
That's what
killed them.
We totally saw that coming, and they didn't use that. The whole spiritual connection there as well. They were trying to use it there, but they didn't go anywhere.
And then the resolution. Oh, let's just burn them.
I don't know. I was all right with burning them. I kept sitting there thinking, you got to dispatch them somehow.
They didn't come up with this earlier.
It felt a little thing.
It did feel a little
just
thing.
We're in the Arctic area. There's a monster on the loose. Let's burn it.
And they're always like, oh, the TARDIS is too far away. It's too far away. I'm sorry. It didn't take that long to get to this house, did it?
We don't know.
They didn't portray that.
They didn't. Although they were disoriented because they were being chased by the beasts at the very beginning.
But how long can they be chased in Alaska without proper gear?
Well, there's parts of Alaska that aren't snow. I mean, I got the impression this
I got the impression
necessary.
This was all Arctic.
Oh, really?
I got the impression this was 30 days of night time.
No, I got the impression this was I got the impression this was cold Alaska, but more tundra type. I mean, there was probably snow on the ground, but not the barren snowlands like you drive up
not
north.
Not Juneau. And
the other thing about this story is, I don't know about you guys, but I was quite lost in this house. I had a real hard time imagining this house.
It didn't make any sense.
The sea room. As though there was really like a giant sea in there. Like, is this the Genesis planet? What was the planet that they're working? Yeah, Genesis. Is this
Honestly, is it in a cave
and they've got an ocean there? It was really hard for me to imagine.
I got the impression of a tide pool with sand.
and
it's like, wow, that's too big to fit in this house.
I got the impression of kind of a geocentric dome, where maybe part of the dome did go out over the sea.
I got square.
I didn't get dome either. I got square. Because you're talking about house and rooms.
It was built into a cave.
It was built into rocks.
Yeah, and part of it was that. But, just like the Truman Show, when he goes out to sea and then hits the wall. that's what this was like. Only instead of a beach with sand, I pictured like an iceberg kind of, this is the edge of the ice. And then out here is sea and then wall. And it's far enough out that there's that. And we painted that wall to make it look like the sea continues on. But,
like the Truman Show.
The Truman Show. But we're kind of faking it. The Bone Room. Okay. So I'm guessing that
what's the point of this?
Bones?
That's a lot of bones.
Yeah. And it sounds gruesome, too.
They name-dropped Bone Room, and then they don't really explain until later that the walls are bones.
The walls are literally like fossils hanging off the wall, and that's what the guy's using for wallpaper. It's just, I don't know. And then
the guy's just morbid to begin with.
He's morbid.
And the stone room, why would you even bother? Look, walls made of stone. There's nothing else to look at.
Again, Flintstone house.
Yeah, look, pretty granite. Okay, let's move on.
We're walking. the house in and of itself, I mean, when the guy was talking about it,
his rationale still is very weak for even building the house.
Building the house was weird. I don't know. And then the one character, that's the other thing is...
So I set that up. So I'm not the only one who didn't think the house didn't make much sense.
No, it made no sense at all. The fact that they were burrowing between walls... And then the convenience of the ocean room or the sea room connecting to the dig site.
Yeah.
How convenient is that?
Well, because it was almost like the writer had established that, there's monsters outside, so we can't go outside in the snow. Oh, secret passage time.
Yeah.
Really? Even though other people were already outside in the snow.
Yeah. Cheat.
Yeah, really.
The one character... and this is the other thing that just drives me nuts. When you populate your story with characters, and okay, we've got a villain that's not very likable. That's fine because you're not supposed to like the villain. But then everybody else in the story makes dumb decisions.
Yep.
Really, the character I liked the best, beside from the Doctor, was the female. I can't remember her name.
The archaeologist, the paleontologist, or whatever she was,
or the design and interior
the
designer.
Interior designer.
Help me out.
She was an interior designer.
Was it Monica?
Monica. Yes.
Monica. It was.
Yes.
Monica.
The fact that she's just talking to talk and calls herself out on this. It's the companion mode that she gets into, and she calls herself out on it. And then she's like, I don't know what's going to happen after this. I really did enjoy her character.
Yeah, I did too. I thought she was one of the better parts of this.
And her and the Doctor had good chemistry.
And Tulung starts out to be a very good character.
He's the one that I really liked.
He starts
and then
out
all
great,
of a sudden,
and then it just
dropped.
Yeah, just like we didn't go anywhere with this character. Even though he's still the central point because you've got him and the other guy.
Brett.
Yeah, Brett. That I mean, essentially, this boils down to their story
parents.
And the connection they have because of their parents. Just the character got really dry. And I mean, I think it was at the point where he starts getting overtaken by the dreams or whatever happens to them when they
isn't enough. I don't know, explained or realized or okay, yeah, they can psychically take over their victims. Right. Okay, so why don't they just lay down catatonic?
Yeah,
so they can come and eat them quickly.
No, they're not that strong, not yet. And then the whole idea of once they consume somebody with a higher intelligence, they have this DNA thing that evolves them quicker and makes them more rational and more.
I don't mind the idea that consuming something
you are what
will
you
change
eat.
Your DNA, because we've seen that in sci-fi other times.
Right.
I can't name instances off the top of my head, but I know I've seen it before.
There was a Star Trek novel with they were bird-like creatures. They're almost more like pterodactyls, but they would crack open skulls and eat brains and somehow digest the intelligence and actually become smarter. There have been other ones, I agree. I can't think off the top of my head what they are. But I mean, I don't have a problem with that if it had been developed a little bit more.
If we had dropped the bone room
and spent more time on the monsters and kind of explaining why they were this way. But it kind of
the
winds up becoming...
The idea that there's these monsters before dinosaurs.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they play with the idea that it's the extinction event or whatever. That is, you know, related to this, but
there was a previous extinction before Adric's extinction, which is the what Chrissy referred to as a lot of references to Earthshock. Especially early on.
And this is apparently the problem that we had because we listened to the web copy from download. The compact disc release included a floor plan of the house where most of the action takes place. That would have been good.
Well,
maybe
hang
not.
On, though. No, hang
I
on.
Still would have been confused.
Can I go a little deeper into that?
Yeah,
because
go ahead.
The book says, the CD release included a floor plan of the building. This was a bit of fun on Gary's part. I was ripping off Malcolm Hulk's Target novelization of the cave monsters, which does the same thing. He says, it was part homage... Part, what can we put in the book CD booklet rather than actually being intended for a guide for listeners?
It would have helped. Maybe not.
So they wanted to make it two pages instead of one.
That was my first inclination when I read that. I thought, well, I'd like to have the... Oh, no, it probably didn't really help. It was a joke.
Anyone else also
room,
think...
Room.
The initial... Okay, we materialized. We're in midair... And we're obviously in Alaska, and oh, here's an airplane, and we emergency dematerialize, and then we rematerialize later, but it's the same spot 30 years later.
Yeah.
Only to tie that in at the very end.
So
it's
that
like,
Nisa could see, and the doctor could witness what essentially...
Yeah.
Really?
Which they assume, they still have no true idea.
It's true.
There's no confirmation of this. They just take on face value. Well, you know, I saw a plane. That could have been Brett's father. No, we have no evidence of that.
Yeah, we just said there was an airplane. It was here.
We just assumed.
I mean, the exact same
spot. No big
spot
deal, right?
30 years ago. But we remember it because it was only 10 minutes for us.
And then him questioning. I like the fact that Tulung questioned, well, how do you know this? And she's like, I saw it.
Yeah, then we have to explain the whole thing. Well,
but then she doesn't
explain
it. She's like, and that's what leads into the whole, oh, you're my spirit guide, blah, 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 blah. If she would have been honest and like, I'm a time traveler. I just came from that time period. I saw this. We would have had less to deal with in the story.
It's quite possible.
She would not have been taken captive and taken to stand outside this dig site and possibly get attacked by the quote-unquote hybrids. I mean, there's so much of this that's just frustrating.
Yeah, there's a lot of it that's frustrating. It is very frustrating, I think, because I was so looking forward to Nyssa getting her due. You know, because we've talked before that I think she's an overlooked companion, and I think she's somebody that, you know, I'd like to see some. And this is her one-on-one with the Fifth Doctor.
And we liked her one-on-one with the Fifth Doctor in the television story we saw.
Yeah, and I'd commented that the Fifth Doctor, for me, has kind of been falling down a little bit, that I really want to get into some more of his stories where I can see what he's capable of and go, oh, that's it, I see now, and I've seen the light. And, wow, this one didn't do it.
No,
it just really felt like it missed the mark all the way around. I don't think it worked as a Doctor Who story.
No.
I don't think it worked as an audio story.
No.
I don't think it worked as a Fifth Doctor story. I don't think it worked as a Nyssa story.
Which is too bad.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're being very, very critical, but I I'll be honest, I don't know how to fix it.
Honestly?
No, this isn't one where I can pinpoint and go, this is what you did wrong.
I would agree.
You put all these ingredients in the pot and you hoped for something good and you kind of got that Hungarian beef stew that nobody likes.
Honestly, I like this less than Minuet in Hell. That's how much I dislike the story.
Well, I did too. I liked Minuet in Hell.
But we all know how I felt about that one.
Right.
That's my point.
I didn't like Minuet in Hell, and I think you're right. I think I like this one less.
I'll take Minuet in Hell over this story.
It's just kind of a blasé audio adventure, and we apologize for making people sit through it.
Well,
in the words of Glenn, our bad.
Or, not for you.
Not for you. Maybe that's what we should be saying.
All of this being said, I'm glad that I listened to it, because it is one more thing out of the way as far as Doctor Who. It's the same thing with the story of Martha. It's something that I needed to hear, because it's part of Doctor Who. But I don't think I could ever revisit this one again.
Yeah.
Now I never need to.
And 20 years, when we're still doing this podcast, and we come back around to this one, I'm just going to rely on memory, guys. I'm sorry.
He's sitting with a long white beard. Maybe, wasn't that the one with the dinosaurs?
Maybe it'll be better 20 years from now when I don't remember much about it.
Were they on an airplane?
There was the Doctor, and he had a TARDIS. That was good.
That part was good.
I don't know. Like I said, there's a part of me that can kind of pick apart and see where the attraction to write this kind of story was going. But man, did it not work. And honestly, the refreshing thing is Chrissy. Knowing that Chrissy is a huge Fifth Doctor fan, that she is a huge Nyssa fan. And her review came back like, meh.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of like, okay, I feel justified in being critical, because... Yeah.
I listened to this before we watched the Crotons, and since I look for my opens based off of what we watch or listen to, I was really hoping the Crotons had something good.
Land of the Dead is not bad to the fault of the Fifth Doctor Nyssa, I will say.
No,
that.
I would agree.
I don't think this is Davison's best performance. By any means, I will say that. But
he was more entertaining to listen to in Phantasmagoria. Which we didn't
but
like.
But any time that Nyssa and the Doctor are talking, that was my only hope, or the only thing that got me through this was knowing that it was the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what carried me through this, is because the Fifth Doctor still had... Peter Davison still pulled this off as though the Fifth Doctor.
Yes.
As the Fifth Doctor. And Nyssa was still Nyssa for me. So that's what pulled me through this whole story. So
this would have been
one of
the
things I can say good about it.
Had this been televised, and had I caught this as an omnibus edition late at night on KCP TV, I honestly probably would have given it about 20 minutes and turned it off.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been that range of, nah, just not feeling it tonight.
Especially young.
Yeah.
Being a kid, that would have been harder to, it would have been harder to keep my attention. Of course, if they could have pulled off the special effects, maybe the visuals might have been cooler, but
I don't know.
I just, there's really not much good to talk about on this
Well,
one.
All right. But we do have some hopefully better Big Finish on the schedule.
Yeah, I can guarantee we've got better Big Finish on the schedule.
Sean, let's talk a little bit about what's on the schedule this week.
All right. This week, we're going to get some more Dalek action.
Daleks! Which I love the Daleks.
I, you know.
Keith's
not looking forward to
Keith's not looking forward to
it. Boy, I'm excited for it. I almost think we should hold off on this until closer to the first episode of the season series.
Well, believe it or not, there are a few more Dalek episodes still out there.
So that's true.
We can always put more of them together. Next week, or for Friday Night Who, we've got Death to the Daleks with John Pertwee.
Yay!
And Sarah Jane.
Pertwee.
Hey, is that a new one?
It is a new one. It was released
Tuesday.
In
the United States.
In the United States. In North America.
North America.
In North America. Region 1. On the 10th.
On the 10th.
So if you haven't purchased your copy, go out and do it now.
Sean had to walk me.
I'd hold your hand as we went over.
Well, that was one, he was buying the other. Yeah. Well, but they were both next to each other. Yes. So if I'd have found one, I'd have found the other.
He bought the Crotons, I bought Death to the Daleks. So we'll get that. And again, Death to the if you haven't seen it, Death to the Daleks is very, very standard Dalek story.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way to say it. It's this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen.
It's
and
enjoyable.
You just know it. But it is probably among my favorite Dalek stories.
I would agree.
Just fun in the way that it's played out. And I think a lot of that is Pertwee. I think a lot of that is Sarah Jane.
I could see that.
And then
I'll decide next on Friday.
A little extra homework now. You got two Big Finish audios, both Dalek related.
I was prepared because you told me last week.
For those of you listening at home,
I'm one part down.
Are you?
In the main line, number 11, The Apocalypse Element, also written by Stephen Cole, so hopefully he'll redeem himself a little bit. And with the Sixth Doctor and Evelyn. And number 15, The Mutant Phase, which is Fifth Doctor, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't listened to that one yet, so I don't know.
That would make sense because we've
already had our seventh Doctor.
Yes. And we're not
the
last
one is the eighth Doctor.
And, yes,
yeah,
which I've already listened to.
So Big Finish number 11 and number 15, Apocalypse Element, Mutant Phase, and we'll do a kind of sort of a Dalek archive, which will be our fifth one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which hasn't started.
There's a lot of Dalek.
There's a lot of
Dalek. A lot of Dalek to
and
get in there.
I'm with you. I like the Daleks, but I'll be honest. I'm kind of ready for a break. Quite honestly.
Quit shoving Daleks.
Well, we got to get through it, man. I got a schedule to keep.
It's not that I don't like the Daleks. It's that, I don't know, they're just so one note.
They are. And, I mean, like I said.
What I like about them, they're familiar.
Familiar doesn't always mean good.
There's a method to the madness. Like, we have to get through these before we can do other things.
That's true.
And I know the other things we're getting to. So
I would agree that they're one note, but I just have this place in my heart for the Daleks because they maybe because I think Genesis was one of the not wasn't the first, but one of the first Doctor Who stories I saw was Genesis of the Daleks. And I just associated Daleks with Doctor Who from then on, and it just everything.
They're certainly among my earliest memories.
In fact, it was hard for me when Sean said, "Well, what are you buying this week?" Because I thought, there's a Dalek story.
I'd have totally
There was a Dalek story. And, no, you gave me the choice.
If you'd have said, "Well, I kind of like the Dalek story," I'd have bought the
Crotons. I did. Well, no, but I in my head I struggled with it. Oh, it's a Dalek story. I love Daleks, but I don't have any Patrick Troughton. And I thought, yeah, you know what? I haven't seen the Crotons.
It could be the Dominators.
Crapshoots. Well, that was the other thing. I've seen the other one. So I knew I liked it, but I've already seen it. So should I own something I haven't seen yet? Or I came down on the fact that I didn't have any Patrick Troughton, and I hadn't seen the Crotons yet, and I was excited about that, owning something brand new that I hadn't seen. And so that's why I defaulted and said, you go ahead.
If you'd wanted to buy both of them, I'd have backed up. I mean, I'll buy them both eventually.
Knowing what I know. But
you can still go pick up the other one.
But it's too late now.
You can still go pick it up.
Well, yes. But anyway, so.
We're both going to own all of these eventually.
You're right. So I'm excited about another Dalek episode, archive myself. I'm not ready to get through it because I'm excited. There's no bad Daleks with the exception of the Manhattan stories.
Maybe, I don't know, maybe we just need to go
back
and
rewatch. I'm sorry, if you say, with the exception of, that means there are bad Dalek stories.
No, I concur that there is. I don't hate the Manhattan Dalek stories like Sean does. I don't
maybe
have that
I need
much
to go
issue
back and rewatch.
They are my
I didn't
favorite.
Obviously they mind those.
Maybe I'll put them on Friday Night Who one night just to see what
I was the only one
deal is.
Defending Planet of the Dalek.
Well, and you know, I honestly was thinking about your comments, and the more I think about it, the more I think that Keith and I may have been unfair in our criticism of Planet of the Daleks, because if we took it as a standalone story, if we had just reviewed Planet of the Daleks,
yeah, it would have been good.
It would have been good. It would have been very enjoyable.
But
unfortunately,
up.
Coming off of the Frontier in Space setup, it doesn't work as a conclusion to that story, and I think that's where we're being
which,
very
which
unfair
is how
to
it would have
regard.
Been viewed
quite
when
frankly,
it aired.
Listen, though. Quite frankly, coming from the other side of it, I had seen Planet of the Daleks as a standalone story for myself. I had never seen Frontier in Space. And so it was, and that's why I enjoyed it. It was very run-of-the-mill Daleks, but it was a Dalek story. It was a decent Dalek story. Then after you guys reviewed it... But the other side of it was you guys critiquing. I could see how it fell down. It fell down as a continuation of Frontier in Space.
Airing that way, it still fell down.
Well, that's a mistake in the script editor's hands.
Yeah.
I mean, quite honestly.
I mean, we can go back and cherry pick like we have and just, okay, we're going to jump to this, to this, to this. Yeah. But viewing in order, and that was one of the few we got in order.
Well, I did it because it was released as a box set. They were two I'd never seen. So I was like, yeah, okay, box set time. But no.
All right, well, there's going to be a lot of Dalek talk next.
It didn't need to be a box set.
There's going to be a lot of Dalek tech next week, so let's get off of this. And let's wrap this week's up for now. So, until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
What?
I had something, and I can't wrap my brain around what I was going to say. Like, it was there, and it was going to be awesome, and then it flew away like a bird.
I'm going to try this one more time.
No, I won't be real.
I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean. Ow!
No, I was just going to see if I could bump it to the front. That didn't work?
No, that didn't work.
Darn.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Would you like the crouton?
I really just...
You did.
I heard it.
Crap out of my head.
And it didn't work.
Good night, everybody. Care for a crouton?
I'm having another one.
This is Casey Kasem, and we're going out on the air with a live request and dedication. Chrissy, this one's for you from Glenn.
Listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.